I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Saturday,
which means it's time for a Front Three bonus podcast. It's recording, Lawrence.
I'm just wondering if it peaked.
We're all in a room together for once. It's a rare occasion. Chris is down from Newcastle. Chris, you're in London.
Yeah,
Durham.
Yeah. To all of that.
Yeah.
Carl, good to have you.
But why are we here, Chris? Why are we in this room right now recording this bonus podcast?
Because a few weeks ago I did a post on Medium, which had five tips to break into journalism, sports specifically. And it seemed to get some decent traction based on the analytics. And there was a lot of guys reached out and girls reached out and said, you know, this was quite helpful. And I think they wanted more detail. It's very difficult because every situation is nuanced. But at the same time, I thought, you know what, if we could come together as a meeting of minds who've all entered through different paths, then maybe we can potentially settle some questions. Because there's things I can't answer and vice versa. And, I mean, yeah. You can answer everything.
We all have different strengths. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, he tries to.
But we have got a lot of questions on Twitter as well. But
yeah. Mostly for me.
Yeah. Chris, why don't you tell us first how you got into your current line of work then? That might be an interesting way to start.
Went to Northumbria University. Mm-hmm. Graduated.
Can I just ask, was that your first choice? Was it a choice
it
to
was
stay
between that and
were?
Leeds.
So why just to immediately jump in.
Oh, yeah.
Tip number one, always ask questions. Why did you choose to stay in that area? Because it's not known as a media hub, is it? Or a journalism hub?
It's not. I think, if I'm honest, a slight element of homebird syndrome, probably. Right. At the same time, I didn't feel that comfortable going to Leeds. I didn't really know about it. I think that's one thing I would say first off.
Don't stroke the table.
Do
it affects the mic.
Do a lot of research about your institutions, because I didn't really do that. I knew that Newcastle and Durham didn't offer anything, and to be fair, I wasn't smart enough to go to either anyway, so it would have been shooting for the stars.
Exactly.
But I think, yeah, actually, like, do you, because, I mean, I had an offer from Edge Hill for an interview. I didn't even tell them I wasn't going to go, and I was very, I don't even know the right word for it. I was just ignorant, I think, to a lot of it. And I think now more than ever, given what you've got to put into it financially, you'd be mad not to do your due diligence on it and work out, like, okay, this course is known for this, or it's NCTJ accredited and all this kind of stuff. Like, you don't have to know your path all the way through, but I think you have to know what you want to get from it at least before you sort of set sail on whichever way you're going to go.
So, sorry, do go on. You went to university and studied
journalism,
just straight up journalism.
Yeah,
was it written journalism?
Yes, but they added a broadcast. We were like a guinea pig course in a lot of ways.
Right.
So we...
It's funny, everyone who does media or journalism says that. They always do. Because they always get sold the whole, the dream of, this is very innovative. Do you know what I mean? We are innovative in so many ways. You're all guinea pigs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, massive.
That's everywhere.
Because we were tested for accreditation for the course, but it didn't apply to our course.
Right.
So we couldn't go out and say, oh, well, my course was this accredited, but everyone after us could.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a good course. Again, I think you've got to make the most of it. I don't think I did that personally. I didn't write as much. I certainly wasn't writing outside of any assignments, which sounds like a cardinal sin now, and it probably is to a certain degree. And I think, yeah, you've you've got to look. I think the difference between university and school that you've had before is everyone works to get you to a level. Whereas really, university, it's the first time where you have to go to the mountain and you have to tell people, look, I'm struggling with this, or I want to do this, or whatever.
Well, I need to know this, or yeah, what 100%. Do you think about this? Yeah.
What did you do when you graduated from uni then? Because I think that's what a lot of people struggle with. You come out of that environment where, you know, there are assignments, everything's set for you. But then when you come out of university, it's all up to you now to try and craft your own opportunities. How did you go about that?
Well, that's the thing. I was quite naive to that because a lot of my friends just got jobs straight out of uni because they did, you know, more practical courses. And I applied for a job at Newcastle and was like, well, I know football, I know Newcastle. Like, this is
perfect.
When do I start? And
that is a really good side, though. Like, because I think a lot of people think, I've got to go to London, or I've got to go to Manchester, I've got to go to a hub. And actually, I think something I really think goes overlooked often is people don't, you know, they've been in that bubble for quite a long time. They don't see that as valuable in a way. Mm. And so I think you did something really good there. It's worth flagging that. Local journalism is really important.
And I remember I applied for a gig, it was like Club Reporter or something like that, or managing editor or something. And I didn't really hear anything back. And I remember brazenly approaching the club's PR staff, who's still there now, and was like, did you get my application? Yeah. Which just hadn't heard anything. Oh, you did. All right. Okay. I'll wait. Don't worry.
Why are you laughing?
100%. Because I had no experience. I had square root of nothing behind me. So I had nothing there. And then it was my girlfriend at the time said, what publications do you read? And so I listed a few off and she said, well, why can't you just write for them?
Why can't you just write for Viz?
The Beano doesn't have a sports page. There'll be a lot of listeners won't know what that means, which is so sad in a lot of ways.
The references.
The Sun on Sunday doesn't have a sports page.
It sounds so obvious to say, you know, think of the publications you read and go to them. At the same time, I would say I didn't start making a pound in this game probably until 18 months into it. I had it was a different landscape at the same time. You would send a lot of emails and get a lot of, we don't have digital budget, which as a fresh faced kid you take as, oh, okay, like that's them telling me the truth, which it's a true statement, but it's a factual statement, excuse me, but it's not the truth.
Yeah,
like they could find the money if they wanted to in a lot of instances, but they knew, like, have 10-15 people wanting to write for us every day. There's no need.
It's also very much a case of people at that time, I think, guarding their own backs and being worried about someone coming in who knew about digital, and then the print space, because it's transitioned so fast into that print space, hasn't it? I think, because when we went to university, we were talking about, I mean, you were a year ahead of me, were you?
I think so.
We were less now. We were we were taught about print, and you know, it was like, this is how you write for print. Mm. But it even seems like print's changed since then in a massive way. Even
given
the style of
age, given away when we graduated.
Yeah. 1892.
You have the inverted pyramid, obviously, which teaches you how to, but like...
Thank you, Jonathan Wilson, for that one, eh?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I look at the way I write features now, and it's probably the other way. It's inverting the inverted pyramid.
So what does that mean? What's that as a term?
So the inverted pyramid essentially is supposed to teach you that you put the most important information at the start. But really with a feature, you're trying to weave a bit of a story.
Mm.
So if you just start with, Milan are a mess, and here's the reasons why, people are like, well, I might stick with it. But ideally, you're trying to lure them in with something, you know, a little bit more captivating, in the same way that you don't have the end of a film at the start. You know?
That's the interesting side, actually. I think because of digital media, because a lot more people have thought about the structure of their articles now, there's a much less traditional kind of... writing, and so you can flip the pyramid either way depending on who you write for, because some films do start with the end, like Fight Club. I know I was talking about it, starts with the end when he's got the gun in his mouth, but you don't know how he got there. And there's something quite interesting about that, is I think certainly reading your stuff down the years, you've gotten so much better at structuring your articles and also your answers in terms of just on the podcast, as opposed to when you first started, I think, and especially at school, you're very much taught beginning, middle, end, point, quote, comment. And that really comes through in your articles when you first graduate, I think.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of questions about writing articles, etc. But I just wanted to get back to that. You said about 18 months it took you to sort of make a pound in the business. So how did you go from those 18 months to actually sort of making it into a career?
When did you meet me?
How did you meet Laura?
What point did I meet you? Had you graduated by that point?
Yeah, definitely.
You've been trained in journalism by the time that we met. Wow. This is incredible.
It was as much of a shock to you as it was to me.
It really is.
Yeah. Sat on your sofa with a horrible moppy haircut. Doing that UEFA live stream. It was literally like,
wow, yeah.
The first time we had met, even, and I'm sat in his front room doing a UEFA Google Hangout thinking, like, I've not made it. Giant porcelain tiger in the corner of the room. Not a lie.
Still have that tiger.
Still has a giant porcelain.
Fair play.
But I think, to be honest, I got lucky is the best way to articulate it because someone you'll know, Alex Caulfield, was at DC United. And I had done like some free pieces and all this, and he said, look, if you want to talk to Dwayne De Rosario, the MVP for the season, I can set you up some time. He's on holiday, but you know, whatever. And I had managed to get the contact for Steve Busfeld, who was then at The Guardian, and I said, look, I've got like half an hour, would you be interested? And it was a little bit risky at the time because he was like, I'll see it first, and he did that a few times. There's a few times he said, no, I'm not interested, which is always tough when you've told a place you've got somewhere. But it was a fairly, I would say, bog-standard interview in terms of he was like, you know, I've gone vegan and that's helped my lifestyle. And, you know, he heard my accent and said, you know, I grew up with British people. And then
Canadian, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Stockton, Ontario, I think it was. And then right at the end, I think I asked him something like, you know, is there anything you regret or is there anything like you haven't, you know, mentioned that you always feel gets overlooked? And he was like, yeah, I turned down Milan when I was 14.
Oh.
And he was like, that's even worse when I consider that's my boyhood team. And I was like, okay, well, there's the start. Like, before we get... Yeah, 100%. Right, I was like, this changed drastically from, you know, from one thing to another. And that's the thing. Like, you can give yourself a tremendous amount of credit for asking good questions. But there is a fair amount of fortune in this.
Mm.
Like, a story drops in your lap or someone interprets a question in a different way to what you were thinking. In the same way that like an editor is willing to give you a chance.
Yeah.
Which is part of the thing is reducing it to fortune must be so frustrating to someone in a beginner's position because it's an intangible. Mm. And it's not something you can actively work on.
Yeah.
You can, I think, go to the mountain as we've talked about and keep networking, going on LinkedIn, all this stuff. That will definitely open up more potential for luck. But at the same time, there is an intangible involved, and I think it's unfair for people to make out as if, you know, Bo Burnham makes that joke about, you know, don't take me like advice off me. Like, it's like a lottery winner saying, sell all your assets, buy all loads of tickets. Yeah. Like, there's no guarantee in that. It's better if you apply structure to it.
I think a lot of people probably think like that, though, but surely, as you sort of mentioned there, you create those opportunities for luck.
The harder you work, the luckier you are, is the phrase.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think very much so. So, briefly,
I was going to say he's never going to sell the ice cream going that fast.
One thing I would say about that as well is I very early on was interested in having a website and all these sorts of things.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And you writing the time?
Just writing a time code down.
I was very interested in having a website and all those sorts of things. And what I realised very quickly was if you've got nothing to put on that website or nothing to put on your LinkedIn, you look ridiculous just having this LinkedIn and, you know, going to people and being like, can I get a job? And you're like, well, you've got one thing on your LinkedIn. But building those relationships and showing something that you can practically give someone is, I think, is a really good side. Like, it's all well and good, like spending hours on your CV or on your website, but actually talking to someone for 20 minutes is probably way more valuable.
Yeah.
And also making sure that conversation is not an empty conversation. Make sure you're bringing something to it. I have a lot of kids message me on Instagram or Twitter and they're like, they ask not empty questions, but they're clearly aimless in a way, or they're before they should be almost getting in contact with me.
Mm-hmm.
Do something, like go out there and film something. Give me something I can look at. Give me something I can read or something like that. Much more valuable to me, and won't waste my time in a way to come and rather than coming to me and being like,
I think that's the difficulty. I think that's the thing is you're so desperate to do something that you think like maybe they'll have the answer. Like I remember sending so many different journalists like, how do I break in? Because you think, well, there must be a formula. Like you don't. And I mean, that's the thing. You started as a runner, I feel like.
As a runner, yeah.
And so how do you get a running opportunity? I've never understood that.
You, it's a good question, actually. You run you get in contact with production companies and say, I'm in university or I'm interested, I want to be a runner, and I want to, this is where I want to go to. And very often someone will read that, and because a running job is essentially someone who goes to get coffee or watches a camera while someone else is not around or just does everything. You can get on set, you can ask questions, and once you're in, you're in. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And so if you then show initiative, you can build from there. And that's how I got in.
So we did the same degree at the same university. Didn't know each other.
We did media and comms.
He was easier than me.
I wasn't as much of a boozer.
Very, very much so in what Lauren's talking about there, I think.
Sure.
You know, he was... Chris just stroked my face there for the podcast. Audience. But what Lawrence was saying there about not having it in your CV, I remember when I graduated, the economy was in a recession, so it was very difficult anyway. But it was all about, unfortunately, trying to do free, unpaid running jobs, low-level jobs.
So you did the same thing you bought.
Very much so. That allowed you to then put on my CV, oh, I went to work for this production company and did this. You might embellish the sort of responsibilities a little bit. It was just getting coffee. You know, I was logging footage. I was doing this. I was doing that. So once you've got like three or four sort of roles on your CV like that, that enables you to then go on to a paid job. You've proved that you've got the skills. You've got the initiative to go and, you know, craft your own opportunities. Now you can sort of try and get paid for that. It is a long slog, unfortunately. I'm sure it's the same today as when we graduate, because there's so much competition out there. But I think it is about, if you can try and make your own opportunities, if you can try and bang on doors, if you can try and speak to people, then you'll make your own opportunities, your own luck.
That's the subtle difference, I think, between what you guys did and journalism, is that like, you can have a really great story when you start out, or you can be a really great writer when you start out. There are guys that didn't do journalism, I think, writing, that are far better writers than I am. And I had a guy I went to uni with who, I think he had an interview with Olivia Bernard about owning Durham City. And the Guardian said, we'll take it, but we'll not pay anything for it.
Yeah.
And he sat and he waited and he sat and he waited, and eventually he lost the opportunity.
Mm.
And I remember the first ESPN piece I did, I didn't even ask for money. I was just like, would you take it? And then the second one, I asked for money. I said, I didn't even say I want. I was like, could we possibly do money? And they didn't even blink. They were like, yeah, we can do 100. Yeah. It's no problem. And it's a difficult one, but if you don't ask, you'll never get it.
100%. This is one thing I was going to say, is that the first company I worked for was a production company that was making online videos. Obviously, it's very different back then to what it was now. But I remember when they were starting, I was working on viral content, as you'd call it. It was like animal videos. Perfect. It was like, you know, weird and wacky, all this sort of stuff. And then one day, my boss was talking about, he was like, oh, maybe we should do something to do with sport. It'd be great if we could do something to do with football. He was like, oh, yeah, let's do a football channel. I'm going to hire in a producer who's going to come and make the football channel. You know, we need to get someone experienced in. And I was sort of sitting there as he was saying, I was like, you know. And then I just thought, you know, I'm just going to go for it. I just said to him, look, I'll do it all. You can teach me how to edit. You can teach me how to do everything. But I want to do this job. That's what I'm passionate about, football. I'll do it. I'll do it. You know, and he was like, maybe he was thinking, oh, it's cheaper than hiring a full-time producer. But he's like, yeah, we'll get this kid to do the whole thing then. And that's how Football Daily started. That's sort of just taking that opportunity.
You started Football Daily from zero. So you were there from day zero. Wow.
From day zero.
So how do you two meet then? How does that go?
So once upon a time, this is a few years after Football Daily started. And like I said, it's very different back then. You didn't really have these football debate shows on YouTube. It was more the sort of stuff you see on Facebook nowadays. Stranger, it's like subtitles, very basic sort of content. But
in many ways, you're a pioneer.
Yeah, in many ways. But we tried to do this football talk show, which awkwardly was called Football Daily Weekly, you see. But, and who were we going to hire? I wanted to get in Marcus Speller. Someone listened to Football Ramble. I was like, I'm going to get Marcus Speller in as a host. But we'd have two guests every week. And one week, the guest dropped out. I think it was actually Robbie from Arsenal Fan TV dropped out. So we needed a guest.
Many ways I am my career, Robbie.
I said to Marcus, oh, you know, we'd lost a guest. It's just going to be you and this other guy. It'd be great if we had a third person. And Marcus went, I know someone. I'll bring him in. He's free.
Marcus's first reply was actually, I think an empty chair would be better.
Yeah.
And then
I was like, oh, maybe we could get someone.
Luke. Yeah.
So Marcus brought Lawrence in then. And I thought, yeah, he's all right. This guy's not too bad. So then we kept using Lawrence.
Yeah.
But that also speaks to the fact, I think, if you make, we're talking about networking, etc. I think if you make a good impression on someone.
No way. There will make a good impression.
No, but I was definitely like, oh, what he's saying is smart. He's quite a good pundit, etc. Yeah. I would use that guy again. So therefore, there's more opportunities that came out of that. When Marcus couldn't present anymore, we got Lawrence to present for a stint. Then when I went to the Football Republic, Lawrence was presenting. I can't get rid of him ever since.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I think if you make a good impression on someone, they say never burn a bridge in these industries sort of thing. if you can keep relationships going, these sort of opportunities will come out of very surprising situations. Such
a realization that came over your face.
But Marcus Bella, obviously, never been you. Marcus obviously liked you and thought you'd be good at that role, and then he got you in, and then the rest is history.
That is good advice to never burn a bridge.
Never burn a bridge.
Or never deliberately burn a bridge. Like, I think there are people who will be very rude to you. Also, be ready for people to be rude. You know, the fact is that actually we work, and most people work in an industry where there are some very rude people. And for some reason in media, there are a lot of people who like getting mollycoddled and, oh, no one's going to be rude to me because I'm blah, blah, blah. It's bullshit. Like, there's a lot of different ways to treat people. There are some very rude people in media and also some very curt and short people. Nice. Yeah.
I think the rejection in general, and I talked about this in the piece, like whether it's person X doesn't follow you on Twitter,
yeah,
or whether it's an editor will not take your pictures but will take someone who you don't think is as good. There is a lot of, I would say, self-esteem related issues that can start in this career. Yeah. If you allow yourself to buy into it, and I can admit, quite honestly and openly, I definitely have. And even now, there are times where I'm like, well, I feel like I'm chasing people all the time to try and get to where they are.
Mm.
And it's so easy to compare. And I think, honestly, the more you do that, the more you'll drive yourself up the wall. Because we're all forging different paths. That's the thing. There is no... in the same way that, you know, there are shows and things like that you want to do and things like this. Ultimately, you have to accept that you're on your own path without wanting to sound too spiritual about it.
There's not one way in either.
There's not,
all three of us have taken very different routes to get to where we want to be.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is, and what's important about that is, it's about the practical side very often of what we've done. I think the whole point of going to university is not necessarily to learn. A lot of people miss the idea of what university really is, which is the practical side of, you know, you get so much more from it than just the degree at the end of it. That's not the final goal.
You've been exclusively self-employed as well, haven't you?
Yeah.
You haven't, though. You've done both. Am I right in saying that? Kind of.
Correct. Although he very much garners the wages of someone who's self-employed.
Do you have a preference, having done both sides of the coin?
I think each has got its own merits. I'm sure you disagree with this, but I think it's self-employment is something that I've built towards. I don't think I would have been able to do that from the start. I think I've gained experience at different companies and sort of the skills to be able to go out there and say, oh, I can do this job for you for one day, I can do this job for you for a week or whatever. Mm. And again, maybe you disagree, but I think the big thing about being self-employed for me as well is the contacts that you build over time of a career. Mm. So there's opportunities that I've got through Lawrence, through different people I've worked with, freelance opportunities that wouldn't have existed if, you know, I didn't know people. So for example, I've done work with Spencer FC, hashtag United, been sort of helping them with some of their content. I wouldn't have got that role if I hadn't met Spencer's brother, Saunders, who I worked with at Football Republic.
Yeah.
You know, kept a good relationship with him. When Spencer was looking for a producer, Saunders recommended me. Again, it's about those contacts you make that I think you build over time. But should we get into some questions? Because we've got a lot of questions.
There's a lot of good questions.
A lot of good questions.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Question here, are Leicester City the best team outside the top six? I don't think he sort of read the initial tweet asking questions about getting into this industry, into journalism, etc. So we'll skip that one. His question from
you're Max, not getting the job, yeah. All right?
Here's a question from Maximilian at Man Like Fosu. big Fosse and Mensah fan, apparently. Is university really worth it? Now, it's an interesting question. Obviously, we've just explained that we all went to university, which led us onto our careers.
Middle class is an incredibly lucrative area to be in.
I'd say...
I look up to this man, but doubt it.
I think it was very useful for me in terms of learning the skills, practical skills needed to sort of edit, etc. in this industry. But I wouldn't say it's essential. I think the essential thing is your attitude and how you go about making your own opportunities, as opposed to saying, look, I've got a degree, that should entitle me to...
One thing I'd definitely say is, and something that I think is missed very regularly, is university is incredibly helpful for certain things. So some people think they go to university, like, you're stupid if you think you're going to university to learn software. You're never going to learn software through university. You might now have access to that software, but very often now, actually, it's quite an accessible software anyway. Mm. So for instance, maybe if you want to be an editor, you could probably, or your parents may be able to afford for you the Adobe suite, or you might be able to crack it or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Before, you had to go to university to get access to that, where it was like, you had to get Avid, which is an editing software, or Final Cut Pro. You had to have a license key for it, so you had to pay a lot of money for it. Mm. Less so in writing, you can just write. But what was incredibly useful for me with writing was I had a lecturer who would just go through everything I did with red pen. And I had like blocks of red pen where she was like, this is awful. Like, this is, and she was so brutally honest, that really helped. And I'm not a great writer, but she definitely improved me through that. What I often see when I go into an office is people who don't, they know the software, but they don't have a very good grasp of how to tell a story, or how to tell a story in more than a one-dimensional way.
Yeah.
And that plays out so often on YouTube and Facebook. There's a reason top tens exist, and it's because some people, I'm not saying this is you, but certain people are really bad at telling stories.
Yeah.
And they'll copy and paste something off Wikipedia, and then they'll read that out in a top 10, and then it will go on.
Million views.
And the same, let's be frank, the same happens at certain big YouTube companies where they're not particularly good at telling stories. Bob was looking at his watch. They're not particularly good at telling stories. And so they get this incredibly one-dimensional, isn't football exciting? All football's exciting. We tell the story of every fan. It's bollocks. Like, it's actual bullshit. And in the end, it'll run out. And it's truisms and all these sorts of things. Don't go down that route. Explore that route. You'll find yourself going down it at some point. But when you do find yourself going down it, explore why you went down it, where you went wrong, and look in the mirror and say, what have I done wrong to get to this truism?
I think ultimately just be conscious of which direction you want to head in. Because when I left uni, I actually regretted my degree for quite a while. I was like, I should have done graphic design, or I should have done something that was more attainable professionally and all this.
You'd have been better at it.
I can't draw for toffee, unfortunately. But the...
You can't write for shit either.
Toffee tastes nice, yeah, right? But I look now, trying to move to the US, I have to have a degree to get the visa that I want.
Right.
Now, like, I'm not saying, you know, plan where you're going to live for the rest of your life or anything like that. But I think assess what you want to gain from the situation, and then ask yourself, well, do I actually get that? And is that worth the financial cost I'm going to sink in? Because my brother left uni after the first year, and I gave him so much crap for it. And yet he's absolutely landed on his feet big time and is doing an IT job now that he would be years behind if he'd stayed at uni. But he went and got himself an apprenticeship, and it was more... I think there's almost a little bit of a social... feeling sometimes that it's an obligation to go to uni, that it's the necessary next step. It's definitely not at all. It's all down to the person, and the more we can preach that, the better.
Journalism question here from Football Disciples. Interesting one. How much should I be requesting to be paid per, say, 1,000 words?
This will range massively on the outlet, first and foremost. I would say your standing as well. That's where it becomes a little bit like acting or singing or whatever. You know, you demand as much. So I've had instances where an editor will say, well, we'll pay you this much because you're more experienced than you know, this situation. There are some that just pay very well. I mean, like BBC Sport will pay you a few hundred. Places like betting sites, without wishing to name specific ones, will probably pay you 50 to 60. Same with kind of UMAX at T4 type places, they'll pay you about 50, 60.
For 1,000 words?
Usually for about 700 to 800.
Right.
1,000 words is a lot. I think that's something.
Yeah.
One of the things I've tripped myself up with for a long time was thinking I had to write 1,000 words, because if I wasn't, then I clearly wasn't telling enough.
Mm.
Actually, brevity is an important thing to remember, because sometimes it can just be superfluous stuff you're needlessly throwing in.
Also, one thing I definitely think that the further you get into the industry, and I think this is something you'll know as a word editor, and also something you'll know editing with other people very regularly. Young editors, and I can only really speak from a video side thing, young editors come back to me when I say change this, they go, I can't. Experienced editors will explore how they can change it, and they'll explore the format with me a little bit. And that's what's really interesting is, I've watched people even at Ball Street or at the Football Republic and all those other guys. Originally, when they come in, I'll say to them, I don't like that edit, or I don't like this bit, or I want to change this bit. They'll go, we can't change it. And you're like, well, that's why you have a timeline. That's why you can edit. what you ultimately find is it's not about making a conclusive answer. It's about making... it's about finding a lot of different solutions. Yeah. And the more you do media, the more you find out actually it's a very solutions-based industry. And you need to be creative, not only in the way that what you put on screen, but solutions to small problems. You can't always afford the most expensive camera. You can't always afford like the most expensive laptop. But it doesn't change. It shouldn't change so much of what your actual thoughts are, even if it does feel that way.
Very much so. Here's a question from...
although medium is the message, sorry.
Question saying, given the work you guys have done in the past with TFR and Football Daily, are there any tips on becoming a presenter? What do you think, Lawrence? In front of camera tips? Probably Lawrence best qualified.
I'd say Bob Bowood's also really good.
You've hired them in theory, so you know what you're looking for.
You go first then. Or any tips on becoming a presenter? Being in front of camera.
Yeah, I definitely say down the years I've been really lucky because I've had people who have been willing to put up with my shit. Boltwood is an incredibly understanding director when it comes down to this stuff. I think I liked to think I was... Kristen's looking out the window. I like to think I was easier to work with than some other people who were maybe a little bit prissy.
biting his tongue now.
Also, I cut my teeth on hospital radio from the age of like 15 and had no one listening to me making a load of mistakes. And so when I then finally got a gig where Boltwood said to me, like, you know, pay you 50 quid or whatever to come in, I was almost ready, and I'd had a lot of feedback. I'd had feedback from so many people down the years.
The craft a little bit.
People always said to me, and originally you listen back to your stuff when you're younger, when you're 15 and 16, and I had an incredible ego when I was 15 and 16. I was like, this is fucking great. Like, I am the best. And I had Chris Moyles to look up to and all these kind of presenters, a big radio presenter back in the day. And I looked at all these other presenters and how to mimic them. The massive issue is a lot of people get stuck in mimicking what they like. It's a really good start to look at what you like and build on that.
Mm.
Then over time, you'll find yourself adding your own little bits in, or you should, or you're going down the wrong route.
Yeah.
Be easy to work with. Again, like an editor, try not to say no so often, unless it's about a respect thing where they're like, you know, can you wear this ridiculous suit? Then you can say no. But if someone says to you, maybe try rephrasing that, don't say no, this is how I say it.
Right, you can.
You can say, I'd like to put that in my own words, or, you know, that sort of thing. I think that's perfectly acceptable. But never say no is a really sort of difficult phrase to work with from a creative side, because it just puts a full stop on somewhere you don't want to be. And it's the same. Like, that's, I'm grateful for the Red Pen and the journalist who went through my stuff with Red Pen. Be the same as a presenter.
Mm-hmm.
Allow someone to go through your stuff and give you feedback. Also speak as clearly as possible. And starting a YouTube channel isn't always the best way to get on something. You know, that's not the only route into presenting.
Yeah.
Jake Humphries is a great example of that. He's really honed his craft through the years.
Mm.
And everyone who's worked with him has always said to me, he nails the link first time, he's really efficient, and he'll listen to you. And being as much as presenting is about looking outward, and I've spoken for a long time now, it's also about listening to those people around you and making them shine even better. Because essentially you're the director's mouthpiece to some extent. And go and listen to the best, if you're into football, go and listen to the best football presenters, Marcus Speller, James Richardson is also good. Jake Humphries.
Chapman.
Mark Chapman.
You know Mark Chapman's actually got a lot better down the years. I think originally he was a bit Radio 1, but now he's much more Radio 5. And also, look at presenters outside of your field, what they do well, and try and think, well, does that fit into my field somehow? Because I imagine you have the same, Chris. You don't just read football articles. Yeah. You'll read a music article and you'll think, well, there might be some parallels there in football.
I'd say not until recently, actually.
Yeah.
I would say that was a change that my current girlfriend sort of, not intentionally, but sort of pushed me towards. And I think that's true, that you should never try to ape the people you admire. You should try to understand their process.
Yeah.
And then take elements of that. So if you like how on the ball Mark Chapman sounds, that's because he's done research, that's because he's done prep.
Yeah.
In the same way, if you like how witty James Richardson is, it's probably because he reads a lot.
The great thing about James Richardson, the great story about James Richardson is he wasn't interested in football when he started doing Football Italia, or as interested, not Football Italia, whatever that Channel 4 show was that everyone knows, the iconic show.
Well, it was Football Italia.
Was it Football Italia?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know about that. again, I covered. He was into music.
Yeah.
And so is Philippe Auclair, who's also a great football journalist now. Both those guys bought an understanding of a culture, and maybe that's again something to understand, is football is not just about like just what goes on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Your understanding of culture, I always put it this way, if you had someone who said to you, I cover ballet, you wouldn't cut the conversation off. You'd be like, oh, that's really interesting. But very often when I say to someone, I cover football, they just cut the conversation off. Mm. And I think, why is that the case? Like, there's got to be a reason why. Mm. So if you want to get into football, try and also look at what your other interests are and don't be so one-dimensional that you only have one thing in your life.
Here's a question from Alex Emery.
Oh, yeah. Friend of the show,
from Sky. How important is it to be first to a story, and where do you prioritise it when writing an article or covering it in any form of media?
That comes from R. Murdoch.
Yeah. What do you think from a journalistic standpoint?
From my experience, it's better to be writing first, 100%. Mm. And journalism teachers will tell you that up and down the country, and they are completely right, because there's been one or two instances where I have just thrown something out. I remember there was a story about Rigobert Song passing away that turned out to be completely bogus.
Right.
And because you don't check it, I mean, to be fair, I tweeted that out, but I never did anything at ESPN, touch wood, that was like that, where I, didn't check it first. But some of that was because of the hierarchy above me, who wouldn't let me do that. Mm. And I think if you're trying to be first, you're probably reporting it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Also, if you're trying to be first, look for what you can actually say. I think a lot of people try and give so much context when they're first that they don't have. Mm. And that's where Ollie Mears went wrong with his, and why everyone took the piss out of him, was
we went wrong.
He wanted to be, essentially, he got overexcited and almost wanted to be, the eyes on the ground.
Mm.
And he was not. He was the opposite of that.
Mm.
Tried that. There's a really good podcast called On the Media in America by NPR.
Mm.
And they have rules about how to break news. Go to their website, read some of their stuff, listen to some of their podcasts. It's about terrorism. It's about all those other things. But it applies to any story, really. Someone dying or, a football match going wrong or whatever.
It's slightly different in football, I'd say, just because I think a lot of publishers, be it websites, be it, people creating content platforms, they want to be first because, obviously, Google being so powerful, the timeliness of your article affects the rankings, etc. Same on YouTube. If you're the first to put up a big YouTube video about, let's say, Paul Pogba moving to Manchester United, you get an advantage there because you were first up. It's more likely to appear in the search results, etc.
Mm.
But I think it is still a balance. As Lawrence was mentioning earlier about what you say in that. So yes, you can be first, but if there's nothing to the content, I don't think there's any long-term gain.
It's not about being first to break it. It's about being first to be accurate. It's about what I think.
It's
also
about first to do it best.
It's very subjective in that sense. You don't have to be first to say it. Mm. You have to be the first to say something relevant and interesting and sort of something that's actually accurate. And that's not necessarily, people see it as almost like a finish line, get to the finish line quick.
Yeah.
It's not that.
No. But I think there was the story about Sanchez moving to Spurs in the summer. So I was trying to read a lot of articles about it to find out about it. And a lot of them were quite empty. It was just, here's the facts of the matter. But when I found one that was giving me a bit of insight, a bit of background, here's what he's going to be able to do for Spurs, here's what he's going to bring to the team. That was the most interesting thing I read. Yeah. And then I'm like, well, I'm going to go back to that website. I'm going to follow that journalist on Twitter, etc.
There's a moment where you have to breathe. And I think any place worth its salt will be happy if you break it first, but they'll be three times more annoyed if you're wrong.
Yeah, very much so.
And that's what you've got to hold on to. And even then, there's times, like, to draw a slight comparison, I've tweeted a stat out that someone bigger has then tweeted out, and they've got all the traction on, because that's just the way it works. And if you're trying, like I said, if you're trying to blow up, if you're trying to blow up or you're trying to be first, I think you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Your reason should always be integrity of honest.
It's always a balance, but yeah. I have been an avid soccer fan, says Chinmay DeVale.
You're not going to get into the industry calling it soccer, mate.
For quite some time now, I've been following Bundesliga, La Liga, Premier League extensively. I really want to get into sports journalism and do similar stuff to Kristen Hennage or Nico Morales. But I really don't know where to begin. Maybe you guys can help. Where does someone begin, do you think?
Start right now.
Yeah.
100%. I wrote quite late into the game. Nico, thankfully, is smart enough to be writing already before he's even finished college. In fact, credit to the man, he's got stuff published with The Ringer before he's even left college.
That's good point to him.
And I don't have The Ringer on my CV, and I wish I did. But yeah, start writing now.
That's a plea for help, if Kristen could.
start writing now, and then find people who can evaluate it and appreciate that. Because I know it might seem like nothing to you, but having stuff, like when I was much younger, being able to send it to Lawrence, and even now I still send Lawrence stuff, because I appreciate his honesty, but I also appreciate that he will take the time to do it.
Yeah, and I also think having someone close to you that you can trust what they say, and also someone that you respect, is a really important thing. I remember when I was a kid, I used to show my videos to my dad because I respected what he had to say. And also it gives you like that sense of perspective on it. Like for instance, when I showed him a video and he'd be like, wait, why is it like this? If you have to explain why something is the way it is, you've not written it or you've not edited it correctly or something like that. And it gives you that sense of perspective of how can I tell my story better, or how can I tell this story better, or how can I get the message across better?
Yeah.
And one thing I've started doing after every project now is writing notes on where I went wrong, where I could have been better. I've gone back and rewatched it 3-4 months later. Go back and read articles or whatever you wrote months ago, and you'll be able to see a progression in some way, and make sure that you're plotting the right route, or the route that you want to be on. I think that's incredibly important as well. Retrospective is great.
Here's an interesting one from Jacob Jackman. Is working for exposure/experience rather than money ever a good thing?
Depends entirely on who's offering it, really. I did CNN 3 or 4 times, I think, when I lived with Lawrence. Didn't pay me jack squat. It was a taxi ride there and back. But at the same time, that was stuff that went on a show reel. That meant I could put that in my Twitter bio. I know from doing radio shows, they would usually put that first. It's not ideal, and I think it's very easy for someone in my position, or you know, people who are in our position earning regular money, to say don't do anything for exposure. But we were that desperate once, and a lot of us did it. So I think it's almost hypocritical to say don't do it. I think you have to weigh whether it's genuine exposure or not, and realistically only you will know whether that's the case.
This is maybe sort of plays into this question from Patrick here, saying, I want to become a football journalist, but every job says I need experience. How would you say I need to go about it, getting the experience?
One thing I think you can do, no matter where you're based, is reach out to local sources. So like I did work at the Chronicle on fly fishing, of all things. I then worked at ITV Time Tees. And when the sports reporter found out I liked football, he basically sat down and quizzed me for 10 minutes to see if I was sort of telling the truth, and then brought me along to a Newcastle press conference.
But this fly fishing.
It was a terrible story. Oh, his mum was so proud, though. It was very sweet.
Hello, can you go?
And that's the thing. Like, if you're constantly doing that, not everyone's going to work out great. I took an internship at Newcastle once.
United.
And I over-egged a little bit how much I knew how to work a camera. We got onto the training field and he went, okay, how does this shot look? And I looked and I didn't see anything. And I went, looks fine to me, boss. He went, it would help if I turned the shutters open. And it was awful. But I had an experience of like, don't BS, because there'll come a point where if he'd just gone, okay, I need you to film this, and I've got no idea what I'm doing. It's every experience is a good one if you look at it the right way. Even recently, I did something with Players Tribune, and one of the editors they had was so fantastic. It just like picked everything apart. And for 2 minutes, I hated it. But once it was done, I was like, this is awesome. This is the best deconstruction I've had in years.
And how also being able to laugh at yourself, or also having people around you where you feel you're able to, like, for instance, you're able to take your eye off the shutter of the camera and go, I can't see anything.
Yeah.
Like, as opposed to being like, yeah, great. Like, this is fantastic. Like, I think everyone has that experience at some point where they bullshit.
That is all we're going to have time for. Unfortunately, I think if there are more questions, people should definitely get them in at the front free on Twitter. Anything specific for Chris, at Kay Hennage on Twitter as well. All the our Twitter bios will be in the description of this podcast. Before we go though, might be good to just give your one most important piece of advice to people out there who are trying to get into journalism, trying to get into football media, digital media. One final piece of advice to leave them with that you think is worth remembering, Chris.
Don't write for anyone other than yourself.
And that's why Chris started the Medium.
What about you, Lawrence?
Try and do as much practical work as you can.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredibly... There was a really good tweet I read this morning which said, you'll buy a planner for 2018 and that's not really the point. You need to be disciplined enough. It's not about the organisation necessarily always. It's about the discipline to be organized.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, I'm one of those people, I procrastinate incredibly. Like, I'll try and do as much as I can.
Sometimes.
I'll procrastinate incredibly for incredibly long time. And then I'm very lucky in that sense that people gave me the opportunity to procrastinate. But now I can't look you in the eye and say procrastinate. But my advice would be go and be disciplined enough to, if you can, write an article every day that just you read, or even just start a Tumblr or start a Medium and just post stuff on it.
Yeah.
And over time, even if you get two or three people reading it, it's not about the amount of people that read it. It's that you'll become a better writer through that. And the same with videos. If you want to get somewhere, film on your iPhone, film on whatever you can, and just you'll get a better eye for the shot or whatever.
Yeah.
And one thing I'd definitely say is never let someone bullshit you that they are more, that their natural talent can trump you in any way, because it never will. And there are people in our industry who want you to believe that there is a massive barrier because they are somehow a special selected one.
Yeah.
And that's absolute bollocks. And there's no one who's better than anyone else.
Well, there you go. One
that's
thing
nine clips.
Yeah, you've got nine pieces of advice, I guess. One thing
number
I'd
10,
say.
Brevity.
Cool. To be fair, I did fit that all into a very short space of time, Chris.
The one thing I'd say, is what we went back to earlier about not burning bridges. I think, you know, in journalism, in digital media, you're sometimes networking when you don't even realise it. When you're just talking to people, there's opportunities that will come out of places you don't even know. So always keep yourself open, essentially, and always try and make these opportunities with people, and you'll be surprised where things come from. But that is all we've got time for today, guys. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back on Monday with the weekend review. So until then, have a bloody good weekend.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.